Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Welcome to Africa Link with me, Isaac Mugabe, in Bonn, Germany. Coming up on the program, Cameroon seals off markets near the border to Nigeria after a series of recent suicide attacks that left dozens dead.
Decisions have been taken to close some market in the border, but people are persisting to go to sell and to buy.
South Africa's main opposition party, the Democratic Alliance, is set to lead a demonstration against President Zuma this Wednesday.
We call on all South Africans who believe in building a better future for South Africa to join us on this march in solidarity with the poor and the unemployed South Africans.
Also on the program, Kenyan investigators are to present a report about the recent attacks by Al-Shabaab militants on Kenyan forces in Somalia. Stay tuned.
Top story.
We begin in Cameroon, where markets near the country's northern border with Nigeria have been closed. The move comes after a series of bomb attacks in recent days that left at least 35 people dead and 70 seriously wounded. The country's Minister of Communication and Government spokesperson, Issa Chiroma Bakari, in a news conference said, since the beginning of 2016, Boko Haram Islamists have attacked northern Cameroon at least 30 times, targeting markets, mosques, and other public places. From Yaounde, Moki Kinzeka sent this report.
The decision to close markets on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria until further notice was announced by the governor of the far north region of Cameroon, Midjiyawa Bakari.
Decisions have been taken to close some market in the border, but people are persisting to go to sell and to buy things. You know that Boko Haram is looking where people are gathering to do this and that.
After Monday's attack, Cameroon soldiers launched numerous raids on the Nigerian side of the border town of Ashigashia, where they believe the suicide bombers came from. Government spokesperson Issa Chiroma Bakari says 17 insurgents were killed in the operations. During the raids, they discovered the bodies of two Cameroonian policemen the insurgents kidnapped less than 2 weeks ago.
Faced with such harassment, both ungrounded and unjustified, our defense and security forces have always retaliated, leading the enemy to incur serious setbacks that have considerably weakened the group and reduced it to mere acts of cowardice, especially suicide bombings, which have become its modus operandi.
Shock and consternation has gripped Bordeaux since the attacks. Businessman Aruna Raphael says it will take time for them to recover in spite of the heavy deployment of troops.
All activities have come to a standstill here, even in neighboring villages. We hope that with the encouragement we have been having from our traditional leaders, church leaders, and the administration, we shall have the courage to carry out our day-to-day activities. The military has been deployed here, and there is a lot of control and screening, but the atmosphere remains tense.
In Cameroon's capital, Yaounde, groups of people have been visiting and sympathizing with people who come from Bordeaux. Ngufo Jacob, leader of Cameroon's University Students Association, says he met with people from Bordeaux to show their solidarity with Cameroon and Nigerian forces fighting Boko Haram terrorism.
I came out to show solidarity with my brothers and sisters in the north who are suffering from the onslaught of the Boko Haram insurgents. I came out also to show to the military that we are one, we are together. We may not have guns to join them in the north, but they should know that we have them at heart, we are praying for them, we are supporting them.
Cameroon believes the militants have resorted to attacking mosques, markets, churches and palaces of traditional rulers because the terrorist group's firepower has been drastically reduced. This comes after Cameroon and Nigerian troops have attacked Boko Haram strongholds within the past 2 months.
Moki Kinzeka with that report. Before we came on air, I spoke to Ryan Cummings, head of analysis at Ready 24, and I started by asking him why we are witnessing more Boko Haram attacks in Cameroon than in Nigeria, where the group initially operated from and had major bases.
Well, I firstly think that the Nigerian government, along with its military, has obviously intensified counter-terrorism operations against Boko Haram within the northeast, and in doing so, it may have curtailed the SEC's operational capabilities within the region, and also forced them out of populated settlements, which were reclaimed by the Nigerian military earlier this year. But in doing so, it might have pushed Boko Haram back across the border into neighboring Cameroon, where it's almost exploited a lack of counterterrorism capabilities within the region to execute attacks specifically targeting security and civilian interests in northern Cameroon. And this is possibly done with the intention of almost dissuading the Cameroonian government of providing any form of logistical or operational support to regional counterterrorism initiatives against Boko Haram.
Would it be fair to say then that to an extent, Nigerian president has been able to deal with the threat posed by Boko Haram compared to the man that replaced, that is Goodluck Jonathan?
Well, I do think to a certain extent that a lot of the initiatives that the Buhari regime has scored against Boko Haram had almost come off the back of, you know, the military campaign that Goodluck Jonathan launched in the final days of his presidency, specifically in the lead up to the country's general elections early in 2015. It was those operations which were coordinated with the assistance of the governments of Cameroon, Chad, and also to a lesser extent Niger, which saw Boko Haram lose a lot of the territory which had formed part of its Nasser Caliphate.
Which brings me then to the question of collaboration. Do you think there is still close collaboration between countries in West Africa to deal with the threat posed by Boko Haram?
It remains very difficult to say, and I specifically say this because the composite Lake Chad Basin Force, which was supposed to comprise of about 700 soldiers from the, 2,800 soldiers, 700 of which was going to be offered by the governments of Nigeria, Chad, Cameroon, and Niger, and then Benin also offered their support of this operation. This composite force has yet to be launched. I think it's missed at least 4 different deployment deadlines. Boko Haram purportedly rated as being the deadliest terrorist movement in 2015 based on casualty numbers recorded in the previous year. And given the ongoing expansion of its insurgency across the region and also the ongoing attacks as we recently witnessed in Cameroon, one would assume that all issues, bilateral issues or multilateral issues between Nigeria and the neighbors would almost be put on the back burner, with the sole focus being on, you know, kind of coordinating a regional response to the SEC. But it still appears that political mistrust between these countries is kind of dominating the discourse, which in itself should be solely directed at finding a solution to the Boko Haram insurgency.
I was speaking to Ryan Cummings, head of analysis at Ready 24.
News, analysis, and feature reports. All that here on Africa Link.
South Sudan rebel leader Riek Machar has accused President Salva Kiir's government of frustrating peace efforts by continuously restricting the movement of his team stationed in Juba. Machar, who recently traveled to Uganda to meet President Yoweri Museveni, said at a press conference that Salva Kiir has shown no political will to solve the current political crisis. Our correspondent Alex Gita reports that Machar also denied reports that he's still giving arms to civilians.
Riek Machar met Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni in a closed meeting in further efforts to ask him to play a bigger role in having peace return to South Sudan. Last year, Riek Machar accused Uganda's president of taking sides when he sent troops to South Sudan to defend the Juba government. Now Machar sees Museveni as a key player to the realization of peace in South Sudan.
We're now at a stage of implementation. I believe he has a critical role to play in persuading President Salva that they should keep course of the implementation of the peace agreement without dwelling on his reservation.
Machar also responded to a UN monitoring leaked report which pins Riek Machar's rebel group of still arming civilians. However, he denied the accusations and emphasized that his team is committed to the full implementation of the August 2015 peace agreement.
There was a war being fought. You don't fight a war with sticks. You use firearms. So I didn't see the relevance of it. But now that there is peace, there's no need of arming civilians because they will use those arms against each other. It doesn't give any meaning arming people when there is peace.
The rebel leader also said the main issue now rotates around Juba's creation of more states than those recognized in the country's constitution. Machar says this is likely to explode the conflict.
The 20 states don't have demarcated borders on the ground. The 10 states have. With the 28 states, the communities are pitted against each other. It becomes a question of land. South Sudan is tribal. They will tell you Denka land, Shuluk land, Bari land, blah, 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 blah. Once you try to change those borders, you're creating war.
In more demands, Riek Machar said his team has asked for a federal system of government to be introduced in South Sudan. Political analysts say there is a feeling of mistrust between the two camps, and Riek Machar said on Tuesday that some of his team members who are in Juba were blocked from coming to Uganda to attend the meeting with President Museveni.
Alex Gitter reporting from Kampala.
Behind the headlines.
In Kenya, a special team of military investigators is expected to present its report to the government shortly after completing its inquiry into the deadly Al-Shabaab attack at the El Ade camp in southwestern Somalia nearly 2 weeks ago. In the meantime, the Kenyan government has launched a crackdown on local bloggers posting text and images said to be of soldiers slain in Somalia, even as it remains tight-lipped on the casualties from the attack that shocked the East African nation. James Shimanyula compiled the following report.
Since the deadly attack occurred, some local bloggers have resorted to posting texts and images of Kenyan soldiers purportedly killed by Al-Shabaab at El Ade camp in southwestern Somalia. The bloggers have also been streaming on their blogs voices alleged to be of Kenyan soldiers in Al-Shabaab captivity. But the government has so far not commented on the authenticity of the voices. One of the bloggers, Yasin Juma, briefly appeared in court on the outskirts of Nairobi, but no criminal charges were preferred against him.
Actually, their main concern was the way I'm reporting the ongoing fighting in Somalia, and to be specific, the El Ade attack. They're more concerned about posting on my social media regarding the El Ade attack. So I believe I'm innocent, and I believe there might be one or two people who might not want the rest of the country to know exactly what's happening in Somalia.
Relatives of the slain soldiers have been streaming to military barracks, but still can't get any help. Joseph Okoth from Western Kenya is one of them.
Up to now, the time I'm talking, we have not had very clearly any information about our son, Michael Okoth.
The government hasn't yet released the final list of the dead, missing, and those who were rescued. Abdikadir Adane, Kenyan Somali Member of Parliament belonging to the country's main opposition party, CORD, wants the Kenyan government to withdraw its troops from Somalia.
We must start preparing to end our role in AMISOM responsibly and to exit Somalia. We can defeat our enemies and minimize our casualties by adopting more effective strategies in Somalia to defeat Al-Shabaab.
But Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta has reiterated that more than 3,600 troops serving under the African Union mission in Somalia, AMISOM, will continue performing their duties in the Horn of Africa nation.
We are in Somalia to support that country, to stabilize that country, at the request of the African Union, and we will continue with our mission. And neither shall we be intimidated by those cowards who choose not to fight in the open front, but choose soft targets.
And as the search for missing alive or dead Kenyan soldiers continues, a Kenyan musician, only calling himself Max, has composed a solemn song dedicated to the slain soldiers he describes as fallen heroes.
Yeah. I go by the name Max, and this is a special dedication to the soldiers in our borders. Who make sure that you're safe whenever you are. When you tie that shoe, going to the club to have fun. God bless the defense forces. God bless Kenya.
That report was filed by James Shimanyula in Nairobi. Now, South Africa's main opposition party, the Democratic Alliance, will lead a demonstration this Wednesday calling for the resignation of President Jacob Zuma. According to organizers, the campaign stating that Zuma must fall is in protest of his handling of the country's economy. It all began last December when President Zuma changed finance ministers twice in a space of a few days, leading the run to fall to record lows. Subri Govender reports. Zuma must fall.
The campaign Zuma Must Fall has become a powerful message that has gained momentum across South Africa. At least 500,000 people have signed an online petition for Zuma to be removed from office, while tens of thousands have taken it a step further by using social media platforms like Facebook, WhatsApp, and Twitter with the hashtag Zuma Must Fall. Announcing reasons for the march in Johannesburg, the leader of the DA, Musi Maimane, said they want the whole of South Africa to unite to promote a fair and prosperous South Africa.
We call on all South Africans who believe in building a better future for South Africa to join us on this march in solidarity with the poor and the unemployed South Africans who are suffering as a result of no economic leadership.
Political scientist Dr. Zakhele Ndlovu, who is based at the University of KwaZulu-Natal in Durban, says he is not surprised that so many people believe Zuma should step down.
For me, it could be sort of like a campaign strategy to say that we are led by someone who is not fit to be the president. By the same token, the ANC has been doing the same thing, because you've seen a lot of marches specifically targeted at the DA, and people are saying that the DA has become the home of racists.
While there has been general support for protest marches among all sections of the country's multiracial population, many people at grassroots levels have expressed mixed views about Zuma's presidency.
He must continue until he finish, and then after that he can go. They can talk, but they must wait until Zuma finishes his term.
I mean, the rain fell. We are suffering right now. He must disappear. We must get a new president right at the moment.
The march that says Zuma must fall does not do anything for us as the youth. The resources that are being taken or being galvanized to march against Zuma are the same resources that could be used to actually fund students and ensure that they have a better life.
A political observer, Siyabonga Dlamini, seems to agree to the concerns raised by some of the people we've just heard. He says, although South Africa is a democratic country and people have their right to express themselves, they should at the same time, if they are not happy with Zuma's leadership, wait for the next elections to choose another candidate.
South Africa holds elections timelessly. So why don't people wait for that time so that they can use their vote, because that's how presidents are elected, instead of having campaigns.
The current campaign of protest marches and on the social media may be popular and have some impact, but whether it will lead to Zuma being removed or whether he will step down voluntarily is unlikely at this stage. Zuma still has another 4 years to serve, and he has the overwhelming support of the ruling ANC to remain in power until the end of his second term in 2019.
Subri Govenda reporting.
Opinion.
Like the old adage says, all good things have to come to an end. It's against that background that Africa Link's team leader Daniel Pels is leaving the department that he has led for the last 4 years here in Bonn and will soon be reporting from DW's bureau in Germany's capital, Berlin. Before we came on air, I sat down with him in one of our studios where he started off by telling me his journey from being a team leader and the new challenges that he's going to take on in Berlin.
Well, I'm going on to become a correspondent in our national political office in Berlin. I took that decision, or I rather requested this transfer, because I felt it is really time to do something new. It was really great being the head of department, setting up the department, working with the team here in Bonn with you and with the others. Mm-hmm. But I felt now it's time to go back to practical journalism. I mean, I really want to hold a microphone in my hand and go out and talk to people. And at least for a while, I want to work without all the administrative duties that I had now as the head of department.
Exactly. This is where I wanted to come in. What are your feelings about it, that you're leaving a department that you helped start, you know, 4 years, and you're taking on other new challenges?
Well, it feels strange in a way, because I mean, I was there from the inception, and I tremendously enjoyed working in the department, and I considered it might be my home in a professional way. I mean, it was not just a place where you go in the morning and you leave in the evening and you have to go there because you have to earn money, but it was a real vocation and a real passion for me. So it was something where I always felt very deeply satisfied in my heart that I'm having this post.
What is your opinion on much that is happening in Africa's hotspots like Somalia, South Sudan, and countries where Boko Haram has wreaked havoc?
I still am shocked when I sometimes see what is going on in some parts of the continent, and especially South Sudan. It's a country where I've been to 2 times, where I once even stayed for a whole month doing research. Is a country I feel very passionate about, and it really pains me when I see very hardworking, very decent people who are denied the basic rights every human being should have in terms of having enough to eat, having enough clean water to drink, having access to health, being able to put their children through school, and basically to live in peace and security. And these people, they have only known hardship for centuries. I mean, a lot of them had to flee to Kenya, to Uganda, to northern Sudan, to Ethiopia. They lived in camps, then they went back, and now they still live a life of poverty, and in some parts of the country, even a life of war and misery. And that's something that shocks me. But on the other hand, I think what is very important, and what especially we as journalists must not overlook, there are a lot of countries in Africa where life has changed for the better.
Well, before I wish you all the best on behalf of my colleagues there at Africa Link, any message you have for the listeners?
Well, thank you very much that you have kept us company for all these years. It was really great. I mean, getting your letters, your emails, SMS also at times. I really appreciate, because really we're doing this for you. I mean, without you, we would be all out of job, because I mean, we are broadcasting for you and not for our own sake. So thanks a lot for that. I really appreciate especially all the kind words, the greetings that were sent to me personally by listeners, by some of the members of our listeners' clubs. And if I may say something, please then just keep to Deutsche Welle, keep listening to us, and most of all, keep on sending us your feedback, your thoughts about the program, about the continent. Remind us when we make mistakes. That's important. Yeah, and most of all, I really wish you that you'll be blessed and that life for you and your families will continue very well.
Well, once again, we wish Daniel Peltz the best of good luck in his new endeavors. And good news for those of you who watch DWTV wherever you are. This evening, you will have a chance to watch Fatou Bensouda, the International Criminal Court's chief prosecutor, appear on Conflict Zone with Tim Sebastian.
On your watch, you as an African, you're losing Africa. You're losing Africa's participation in this court.
I don't think...
That's a central blow to the credibility of this court.
I do not think that the voices of a few leaders or a few people from Africa should be used to disregard the support that we still have in Africa. We do have support in Africa. As I told you, just recently, we were an individual was arrested by Africans and surrendered to the court.
Don't miss DWTV's Conflict Zone with Tim Sebastian. Tough answers for tough questions. Check your local listings. And there we come to the end of the program. Remember, we'd like to hear what you think about the stories that we've covered. Just send an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110 Bonn, Germany, or an SMS to country code 49160 957 59510. I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn.